And we're talking employment issues, recruitment issues with Brian Briscoe, as we do every few weeks. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, James. How
Let's
are you?
Talk. I'm talking about something which I think is a terrific topic this morning, the getting the right number. And what I mean by that is that you've got a job offer on the table, potentially, that you know that they're interested in you. On Tuesday, you've got the final interview down to potentially the last two, the last three. And the question comes, so Brian, what are you looking for salary-wise? Because it's not always advertised, is it? A lot of these jobs, those numbers aren't mentioned. So
correct.
What are you looking for? You know, what are you currently earning, or what are you looking for? And you're thinking, oh, God, no, I knew they'd ask this. So what are we going to say? Are we going to go in high? Are we going to go in low? Should we just play safe? What do we do? You go in high, or the guy winces, and suddenly you feel the deal's off. What do you do? How do you pitch that just right so that they turn around and say, I think that's fair, let's go for it? Mm. You know, how do you get that right?
Spoken like a man that's had experience like this.
Well, running your own business, I think you're always doing it, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. We're always asking for jobs. you raise a good point in the introduction there, that candidates are expecting the conversation the whole way through the process, yet so many are ill-prepared when it gets there.
Yeah.
And you find that, we find particularly with mid to senior candidates, that you'd expect them to have done a lot of their homework and worked out their figure and worked out their range. And then it's almost like so many other things in the process, the conversation becomes very reactive rather than proactive.
Yep.
So I thought really good area to cover off today, and one that if you've got two or three things lined up for yourself, you can become so much more prepared and ready for battle, so to speak. Because it's an emotional conversation.
It is.
For both parties. And as a result, it's an awkward conversation. I think people kind of shy away from money conversations in life.
Why is that, do you think?
Oh, I don't know.
I think we're racked
with guilt and suspicion of greed when all we're trying to do is take care of our family at times. And there's a real there's a real balancing act to this in from both senses. Someone who is in charge of running recruitment companies, I see this salary creep in WA all too clearly.
Of course.
And it's a dangerous thing, right? Our affordability is so important. So I'm not preaching the virtues of asking for pay rises all the time to the point where we become less competitive than other parts of the world in relation to what we're doing. But at the same time, it's not always about getting that monstrous pay rise. It is about starting your relationship with your employer around the most awkward conversation in a really powerful way. So that's a really important point to make about the offer. It's not about getting $2,000 more sometimes. It's about setting your relationship up with your employer in a powerful way by having the awkward conversation well.
Yep.
And it says a lot. We study a lot of how candidates will go about this conversation. It says a lot about their inner workings and their default personality and traits, right?
Okay. So what do you mean by saying it well?
Well, there's a few things that you can do to really get this right. First is knowing what you're worth in the marketplace.
Right.
So there's a lot of information online now that will tell you. So I'll just use any example. If you're a 10-year experienced mechanical engineer, or you're an 8-year experienced sales and marketing manager, or you're a 5-year experienced accountant, you should be able to go online and research and get an understanding of what your what your skills are worth. So you're not exactly getting, well, what is James Lush worth?
Yeah. But roughly.
And you're giving yourself a range, because it's amazing, particularly if you've been in a job for a long time, what you're getting paid may not relate well to what the market's paying, because the market might have had a lot of salary creep in that time and you've just had your 3-5% increases a year, right? So it's really good for you to understand what you're worth. There's no point you going in and battling for an offer when then you find out, well, you were asking for 30% more than your candidate.
Yes.
And you realize that you've blown your chances. So there's a real balancing act here between, as you said in your intro, getting the offer that's right for yourself without pricing yourself out of the marketplace. So knowing what your market is paying and knowing what you're worth is very, very important. The other thing that, and you probably heard me mention this in the last few times I've spoken, is if you know what you're after in your job, you know what your top 5 wish list is, negotiating the offer doesn't need to be all about money. Everyone thinks money when they think offer.
Well, that's tangible. It's measurable, isn't it?
It is. But you know what? So are incentives. So are extra annual leave days. So are perks such as parking or use of pool car, or, you know, the list can go on. Everyone thinks when they're going in for an offer that it has to be about something with a dollar sign in front of it.
Yes.
It's the package you're negotiating.
Right.
And, you know, so few people actually ask for what they want. They just use money as the key. I've always said no one ever leaves a job because of money, but it's always used as the excuse for leaving a job.
True.
People leave jobs because of lack of challenge, lack of recognition, lack of opportunity, a lack of balance in their life, And then they also mention the money side.
But isn't it also because you go to your peers or you go to your friends and family, and the first question they'll ask you is, I hope you got, you know, what you were after. It's never a case of, by that they didn't mean, I hope you got your pool car thrown in.
Yes. Yeah, but did you get what you're after? Well, what were you after? You know, and it's very important in this side for you to be honest and be courageous, but also be reasonable. I'm a big believer in the prove yourself and then be rewarded approach.
I think that's a good approach. Can you set a salary for someone and say, we'll review that in 3 months once you've shown me how good you are?
Absolutely. But the showing me how good you are, I think, needs to be tangible and quite clear and
okay.
Concise. So,
yes.
You know, If you can get, this is another really important part of the offer stage, negotiate the expectations of you. So rather than going in with the attitude of I want, go in with the question, what is wanted of me? How are you going to decide I've been successful in the first 3 to 6 months? As someone who gets involved at, you know, quite a senior level employing people, it's amazing how impressed you are when a candidate asks questions like that.
Mm.
I want to get an understanding of what will define success in this role. So if you can get to that stage, you can sit down with your prospective employer and say, right, so if I did this, 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 and this in 3 months, I'm happy to start on this, but could my salary be reviewed to this in 3 months if I achieve those things? Because what you're basically saying to the employer is, I'm willing to share the risk with you.
Yes.
I'm not asking to take all the risk here.
That's a no-brainer, isn't it?
Never done that. You know, it's done like 1% of the time.
Really?
Yeah, because candidates don't feel their ability to negotiate into the future. People feel their ability to negotiate in the present, whereas you're much more powerfully able to influence an employer in the future. Once they've seen, all right, well, James has come in, he's proved himself. He said he was going to do that and he's done it.
Yeah.
He said he was going to hit those targets and he's hit them. Now we're happy to pay him more.
Yeah.
Whereas if you don't perhaps have that conversation with an employer, your first pay review might be 12 months in.
Yeah.
At which stage you may have become kind of stereotyped into the mainstream employee.
Yeah.
You do have a chance to be a little bit different, albeit within in the principles and the precedence of the employer.
Yeah.
The other thing I think to mention around that is when you're walking into a recruitment company or a hiring manager, use them as your partner. They will probably understand more the employer's point of view around salary than you will.
Yes, okay. And that's important, isn't it? Being able to understand the other side. If it's all about you, you're going to get this wrong. And that's
Absolutely.
Why you can so easily blow the deal. Do you find that employers will have a fixed figure in their mind and that's what they're going to give? Or is it sort of a ballpark figure? And if someone is excellent, they'll push it?
I think up to a certain level, and I'm going to almost put a monetary value, I would suggest that up to negotiations of salaries of $100,000, there's often a precedent set. And it depends whether it's public service or whether it's industry. But up to about $100,000, there are usually price points set by the employer. As you start to get more senior than that, there is a bit more of, let's get the right person for the job.
Yes.
If we have to pay 10% more, we will.